Chapter 19. I found her down in the old neighborhood near the blueberry swamp, where my mother lived, and where Lop-Ear and I had built our first tree shelter. It was unexpected. As I came under the tree, I heard the familiar soft sound and looked up. There she was, the Swift One, sitting on a limb and swinging her legs back and forth as she looked at me. I stood still for some time. The sight of her had made me very happy. And then an unrest and a pain began to creep in on this happiness. I started to climb the tree after her, and she retreated slowly out the limb. Just as I reached for her, she sprang through the air and landed in the branches of the next tree. From amid the rustling leaves she peeped out at me, and made soft sounds. I leaped straight for her, and after an exciting chase the situation was duplicated. For there she was, making soft sounds and peeping out from the leaves of a third tree. It was borne in upon me that somehow it was different now from the old days before Lop-Ear and I had gone on our adventure journey. I wanted her, and I knew that I wanted her. And she knew it too. That was why she would not let me come near her. I forgot that she was truly the Swift One, and that in the art of climbing yes he had been my teacher. I pursued her from tree to tree, and ever she eluded me, peeping back at me with kindly eyes, making soft sounds, and dancing and leaping and teetering before me just out of reach. The more she eluded me, the more I wanted to catch her, and the lengthening shadows of the afternoon bore witness to the futility of my effort. As I pursued her, or sometimes rested in an adjoining tree and watched her, I noticed the change in her. She was larger, heavier, more grown up. Her lines were rounder, her muscles fuller, and there was about her that indefinite something of maturity that was new to her, and that incited me on. 3 years as he had been gone, 3 years at the very least, and the change in her was marked. I say 3 years. It is as near as I can measure the time. A fourth year may have elapsed, which I have confused with the happenings of the other 3 years. The more I think of it, the more confident I am that it must be 4 years that she was away. Where she went, why she went, and what happened to her during that time, I do not know. There was no way for her to tell me, any more than there was a way for Lop-Ear and me to tell the folk what we had seen when we were away. Like us, the chances as he had gone off on an adventure journey, and by herself. On the other hand, it is possible that Red Eye may have been the cause of her going. It is quite certain that he must have come upon her from time to time, wandering in the woods. And if he had pursued her there is no question, but that it would have been sufficient to drive her away. From subsequent events, I am led to believe that she must have traveled far to the south, across a range of mountains, and down to the banks of a strange river, away from any of her kind. Many tree people lived down there, and I think it must have been they who finally drove her back to the horde and to me. My reasons for this, I shall explain later. The shadows grew longer, and I pursued more ardently than ever, and still I could not catch her. She made believe that she was trying desperately to escape me, and all the time she managed to keep just beyond reach. I forgot everything, time, the oncoming of night, and my meat-eating enemies. I was insane with love of her, and with anger too, because she would not let me come up with her. It was strange how this anger against her seemed to be part of my desire for her. As I have said, I forgot everything. In racing across an open space I ran full tilt upon a colony of snakes. They did not deter me. I was mad. They struck at me, but I ducked and dodged and ran on. Then there was a python that ordinarily would have sent me screeching to a treetop. He did run me into a tree, but the Swift One was going out of sight, and I sprang back to the ground and went on. It was a close shave. Then there was my old enemy, the hyena. From my conduct he was sure something was going to happen, and he followed me for an hour. Once we exasperated a band of wild pigs, and they took after us. The Swift One dared a wide leap between trees, that was too much for me. I had to take to the ground. There were the pigs. I didn't care. I struck the earth within a yard of the nearest one. They flanked me as I ran, and chased me into two different trees out of the line of my pursuit of the swift one. I ventured the ground again, doubled back, and crossed a wide open space, with the whole band grunting, bristling, and tusk-gnashing at my heels. If I had tripped or stumbled in that open space, there would have been no chance for me. But I didn't. And I didn't care, whether I did or not. I was in such mood, that I would have faced old Sabretooth himself, or a score of arrow-shooting fire people. Such was the madness of love. With me. With the swift one it was different. She was very wise. She did not take any real risks, and I remember, on looking back across the centuries to that wild love chase, that when the pigs delayed me, she did not run away very fast, but waited, rather, for me to take up the pursuit again. Also, she directed a retreat before me, going always in the direction she wanted to go. At last came the dark. She led me around the mossy shoulder of a canyon wall that outjutted among the trees. After that we penetrated a dense mass of underbrush that scraped and ripped me in passing. But she never ruffled a hair. She knew the way. In the midst of the thicket was a large oak. I was very close to her when she climbed it, and in the forks, in the nest shelter I had sought so long and vainly, I caught her. The hyena had taken our trail again, and he now sat down on the ground and made hungry noises. But we did not mind, and we laughed at him when he snarled and went away through the thicket. It was the springtime, and the night noises were many and varied. As was the custom at that time of the year, there was much fighting among the animals. From the nest we could hear the squealing and neighing of wild horses, the trumpeting of elephants, and the roaring of lions. But the moon came out, and the air was warm, and we laughed and were unafraid. I remember, next morning, that we came upon two ruffled cockbirds that fought so ardently that I went right up to them and caught them by their necks. Thus did the swift one and I get our wedding breakfast. They were delicious. It was easy to catch birds in the spring of the year. There was one night that year when two elk fought in the moonlight, while the swift one and I watched from the trees, and we saw a lion and lioness crawl up to them unheeded, and kill them as they fought. There is no telling how long we might have lived in the swift one's tree shelter. But one day, while we were away, the tree was struck by lightning. Great limbs were riven, and the nest was demolished. I started to rebuild, but the swift one would have nothing to do with it. As I was to learn, she was greatly afraid of lightning, and I could not persuade her back into the tree. So it came about, our honeymoon over, that we went to the caves to live. As Lop-Ear had evicted me from the cave when he got married, I now evicted him, and the swift one and I settled down in it, while he slept at night in the connecting passage of the double cave. And with our coming, to live with the horde came trouble. Red Eye had had I don't know how many wives since the singing one. As he had gone the way of the rest. At present he had a little soft spiritless thing, that whimpered and wept all the time, whether he beat her or not, and her passing was a question of very little time. Before she passed, even, Red Eye set his eyes on the swift one. And when she passed, the persecution of the swift one began. Well for her, that she was the swift one, that as he had that amazing aptitude for swift flight through the trees. She needed all her wisdom and daring in order to keep out of the clutches of Red Eye. I could not help her. He was so powerful a monster, that he could have torn me limb from limb. As it was, to my death I carried an injured shoulder, that ached and went lame in rainy weather, and that was a mark of his handiwork. The swift one was sick at the time I received this injury. It must have been a touch of the malaria from which we sometimes suffered. But whatever it was, it made her dull and heavy. She did not have the accustomed spring to her muscles, and was indeed in poor shape for flight, when Red Eye cornered her near the lair of the wild dogs, several miles south from the caves. Usually, she would have circled around him, beaten him in the straightaway, and gained the protection of our small-mouthed cave. But she could not circle him. She was too dull and slow. Each time he headed her off, until she gave over the attempt, and devoted her energies wholly to keeping out of his clutches. Had she not been sick, it would have been child's play for her to elude him, but as it was, it required all her caution and cunning. It was to her advantage that she could travel on thinner branches than he, and make wider leaps. Also, she was an unerring judge of distance, and as he had an instinct for knowing the strength of twigs, branches, and rotten limbs. It was an interminable chase. Round and round and back and forth for long stretches through the forest they dashed. There was great excitement among the other folk. They set up a wild chattering, that was loudest when Red-Eye was at a distance, and that hushed when the chase led him near. They were impotent onlookers. The females screeched and gibbered, and the males beat their chests in helpless rage. Big Face was especially angry, and though he hushed his racket, when Red-Eye drew near, he did not hush it to the extent the others did. As for me, I played no brave part. I know I was anything but a hero. Besides, of what use would it have been for me to encounter Red-Eye? He was the mighty monster, the abysmal brute, and there was no hope for me in a conflict of strength. He would have killed me, and the situation would have remained unchanged. He would have caught the Swift One, before she could have gained the cave. As it was, I could only look on in helpless fury, and dodge out of the way, and cease my raging when he came too near. The hours passed. It was late afternoon. And still the chase went on. Red-Eye was bent upon exhausting the Swift One. He deliberately ran her down. After a long time she began to tire, and could no longer maintain her headlong flight. Then it was that she began going far out on the thinnest branches, where he could not follow. Thus she might have got a breathing spell, but Red-Eye was fiendish. Unable to follow her, he dislodged her by shaking her off. With all his strength and weight, he would shake the branch back and forth until he snapped her off as one would snap a fly from a whiplash. The first time, she saved herself by falling in two branches lower down. Another time, though they did not save her from the ground, they broke her fall. Still another time, so fiercely did he snap her from the branch, she was flung clear across a gap into another tree. It was remarkable, the way she gripped and saved herself. Only when driven to it did she seek the temporary safety of the thin branches. But she was so tired, that she could not otherwise avoid him, and time after time she was compelled to take to the thin branches. Still the chase went on, and still the folk screeched, beat their chests, and gnashed their teeth. Then came the end. It was almost twilight. Trembling, panting, struggling for breath, the Swift One clung pitiably to a high thin branch. It was 30 feet to the ground, and nothing intervened. Red-Eye swung back and forth on the branch farther down. It became a pendulum, swinging wider and wider with every lunge of his weight. Then he reversed suddenly, just before the downward swing was completed. Her grips were torn loose, and, screaming, she was hurled toward the ground. But she righted herself in midair and descended feet first. Ordinarily, from such a height, the spring in her legs would have eased the shock of impact with the ground. But she was exhausted. She could not exercise this spring. Her legs gave under her, having only partly met the shock, and she crashed on over on her side. This, as it turned out, did not injure her, but it did knock the breath from her lungs. She lay helpless and struggling for air. Red-Eye rushed upon her and seized her. With his gnarly fingers twisted into the hair of her head, he stood up and roared in triumph and defiance at the odd folk that watched from the trees. Then it was that I went mad. Caution was thrown to the winds. Forgotten was the will to live of my flesh. Even as Red-Eye roared, from behind I dashed upon him. So unexpected was my charge that I knocked him off his feet. I twined my arms and legs around him, and strove to hold him down. This would have been impossible to accomplish, had he not held tightly with one hand to the Swift One's hair. Encouraged by my conduct, Big Face became a sudden ally. He charged in, sank his teeth in Red Eye's arm, and ripped and tore at his face. This was the time for the rest of the folk to have joined in. It was the chance to do for Red Eye for all time. But they remained afraid in the trees. It was inevitable that Red Eye should win in the struggle against the two of us. The reason he did not finish us off immediately was that the Swift One clogged his movements. As he had regained her breath, and was beginning to resist, he would not release his clutch on her hair, and this handicapped him. He got a grip on my arm. It was the beginning of the end for me. He began to draw me toward him into a position where he could sink his teeth into my throat. His Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.